of this Hakdama in particular. We'll be looking, hopefully, at a series of it. There are three. Rambam is famous from several different works. He's famous in different circles for different works. To some, he's most famous as author of Moreh Nevuchim, which was his magnum opus in Jewish philosophy, and in trying to, in many ways, synthesize parts of Aristotelian philosophy into Jewish thought. And in many circles, he's most famous for his tour de force in Halacha, his Mishnah Torah, in which he really did something that no one else had done before him. Which is that there had been many, a whole series of sermons, a whole literature for several centuries before the Rambam, of trying to create digests of the Gemara and trying to, as abridged versions that would cut out a lot of the Shakavataria, but encompass all of the bottom line halacha lemasa. What the Rambam did is took that to an entirely new level in three ways. He broadened the corpus to look not only at Talmud Bavli, but the Mishnah Torah encompasses Bavli, Yerushalmi, Tosefta, Midrash, Halacha. He broadened the scope in the sense that he was looking not only at what we, as Rif did, that which is Halacha Lamasa, Bezman Hazeh, but the broader sense of all of Halacha. And he rethought the whole organizational scheme. And points 2 and 3 really speak to something which goes beyond the Mishnah Torah. It's going to be directly relevant to what we're going to experience in as we begin to learn the Rambam's introductions to the Perush HaMishnah. Because he broadened the scope vastly to encompass Kachem and Taurus and all the parts of Halacha that aren't relevant to us right now, nowadays. He also broadened the scope in the sense of looking at Emunah and Hashkafa as much a part of a norm of Yadus as Tzitzis and Tefillin and Sukkah and Kachem and Taurus. He broadened the scope of all those different dimensions. As well, the third major element, third major chiddush in writing the Mishnah Torah was to, the svarim that come before him had taken brachas and sort of narrowed it down, abridged it. And you take Shabbos and you abridge it. Work within the organizational scheme of Shas. And the Rambam started from square one and sort of sat down with a blank canvas and said, okay, so I want to encompass all the Tariq mitzvahs in a coherent logical system, so how am I going to build that? And he took the number 14, which hadn't even been a number in use beforehand, and 14 Sifrei, the 14 Sfarim of Mishnah Torah, and built from there. And an exquisite sense of organization, and an exquisite literary sense of building and planning in advance. What we're about to experience as we begin to learn the Hakdamas to Mishnah, we're going to get a chance to enjoy a lot of that in a much more, so to speak, a much more casual format. Because Mishnah Torah Rambam is very formal. You don't really hear the Rambam's voice. Mishnah Torah Rambam is really trying to, as much as possible, convey the words of Chazal, but compressed and focused. So he's quoting one line from the Gemara, quoting one line from Yerushalmi. You rarely hear the Rambam speaking. Mishnah Torah, the Rambam, in Perush HaMishnah, the Rambam wrote earlier, which is meant to be an introduction to Torah Shebaal Peh, by writing a popular Perush on Mishnah. It was meant to make the learning of Mishnah accessible. It was meant to be an entree point for many people to begin to learn Torah Shebaal Peh in a serious way, and for people who already had waded in more seriously into Torah Shebaal Peh, to allow for a chance to sort of bring things back and concretize things around the Mishnayos. And he wrote in Arabic, specifically because he wanted to be accessible to a broad public. And you really hear the Rambam talking. Often about the same topics he'll treat Mishnah Torah, but it's much more conversational. And most of the Perush is line by line, Mishnah by Mishnah. He'll take a Mishnah and he'll have some comments on the next Mishnah, some more comments, and so on and so forth. But every once in a while, the Rambam says, let's step back and let's give background. There are several times he does that in a halachic context. There are three times that he does that in a hashkafic or a munah context. Three major hakdamas in the area of Jewish philosophy. There's the hakdama to Mishnah as a whole, it's sometimes misnamed the Hakadama to Zram. It comes before Zram because that's where it begins. It's really Hakadama to Mishnah as a whole, and we'll see in a moment. It's really introduction to Torah Shabbat Peh. Seeing Mishnah as the first major text of Torah Shabbat Peh is going to introduce the whole system. And then you have the introduction to Pirkei Avos, which is sometimes called the Shmona Prakim. And there it's meant to be an introduction. That was an introduction to, if you will, a Jewish psychology and a spiritual psychology, understanding the psyche, understanding the neshama, understanding the Yetzirah. And then there's the introduction to Perek Chelek, the closing Perek of Sanhedrin, where he talks about teleology, the goal of life, what it's all about, and closes with an enumeration of the 13 animals. And so we're going to start, and tonight we begin, the Rambam's introduction to Mishnah, which as I mentioned is really introduction to Torah Shabbat Peh as a whole. And the Rambam's, his sense of organization, of nuance, is gorgeous, and it's on full display in this Hakdamah. We're going to get a sense of his broadness, we're going to get a sense of his curiosity, and we're going to get a sense of the exquisite organization. Because officially, the organizational scheme of the Akadama, just a loose chest show of hands, just to get a sense where people had, how many people had a chance to peek through at least the first page? Okay, no, that's pretty solid. So you saw that he begins with Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And how Moshe Rabbeinu taught Torah. And ostensibly, the organizational scheme of this Akadama as a whole is chronological. He begins with Moshe Rabbeinu, then he's going to move on to Yehoshua, and sort of how things go until finally get to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and so what prompted Rabbi Nasi to write Mishnah, and how he organized Mishnah, and then we're going to move on to Gemara, and the parts of Gemara, and Gaonim, to this very day, and now we're ready to begin Brachas Paragav. So ostensibly, it's a chronological introduction. The truth is, as we're already beginning to see, and I want to dive in very soon to the text, we already begin to get sort of a foreshadowing here. He's gonna work chronologically, but they're obviously a very deliberate sense. There are topics he wants to cover, and he's going to use the chronology as a frame in which to discuss a couple of major topics. And we'll see. He's going to use the discussion of Moshe and post Moshe to talk about Nevuah. We'll get to that probably not tonight, but hopefully next week. And he's going to talk, in talking about from Yehoshua to Yehuda Nasi, he's going to begin to talk about the structure of Halacha and the different parts of Torah Shel Peh, and what do we believe God taught Moshe on Sinai, what do we believe God did not teach Moshe on Sinai, and what was developed later, several different parts to that. And then the discussion about Gemara, which is ostensibly just sort of giving you a basic bibliography, like the parts of Gemara and who wrote it, is an opportunity for the Rambam as well to launch into the second half. If the first half of the introduction is all about halacha and nevuah parts of Torah Shel Peh, the second part will be the role of Agalata. And what's that doing there? And how are we supposed to make sense of it? If these are very smart Jews who wrote this, so how do we make sense of Agalata in a sophisticated way? So we're in for a treat. As I mentioned, the email. The Rambam will be a master tour guide. Officially, we're going chronologically, and we will be going chronologically, but there'll be very significant digressions along the way that you get the impression of very much part of the original plan. The Rambam of Kafach, I think, writes, they have found the Geniza, some of the Rambam's notes. And you can reconstruct the way he planned what he wrote, and it's clear the incredible amount of forethought went into the architect, design the architecture of whatever he wrote. Yeah.
So would you say that this should be suggested preface before someone learns Mishnah and Gemara? Would that make sense or not necessarily?
But that's the way he wrote it. I'm not sure that it depends on what age someone's approaching Mishnah.
Why
don't we teach this in school?
Why wouldn't they teach this first?
I do. I'm not sure that this is the right forum to discuss revamping the educational system. It's something I'm more than glad to think about. I can say personally, something that always struck me is there was legal discussion a couple of decades ago about whether or not God has a place in a public school classroom. But I think Kuliyama Pligi that God wants to have a very prominent place in a yeshiva classroom. And I think all of us, and not to point fingers at anyone else, we should look at ourselves as Jews, as parents, as whatever role we have with ourselves, with others, is to ensure that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is very much a central part of the foreground of our thinking and the foreground of our conversations, and particularly conversations around the house, if you teach in school or if you teach in your home. But I'll share with you a maisa, and then we'll jump in. It's a chesish maisa, but you can tell chesish maisa and then learn Rambam. I don't think there's a dichotomy there. I apologize if I may have mentioned this in the last couple of months in shul. It's a Kutzker maisa. The Kutzker was a very charismatic man, and he was known for making these very brief statements that everyone had to sort of figure out afterwards what he was driving at. And he was known for being a great stickler for emes. And this story happened, I believe, with the Chiddushi Harim. I'm not sure, the first Gar Rebbe. If I remember correctly, he ultimately became one of the great Talmidim of the Kutzker. And I think this story happened with the Chiddushi Harim. That as a young man, he was looking, he was already a Talmud Chacham in the making. And already was, I think, part of the world of Chassidus. And he was looking to attach himself to a Rebbe. So, and someone told him he should check out Kutzk, because he goes to Kutzk, it was, I think, at old time. He shows up in Kutzk, and he's listening to what the Rebbe says, and talking to the Hasidim, and learning the Beis HaMedrash. It was very nice, but it was, you know, it was all very nice, but it didn't grab him. And he was going to leave. I think maybe he's there for Rosh Hashanah, and then after Rosh Hashanah, he was going to leave. Rosh Hashanah was very nice, it was beautiful, davening, and very hard. So, but, you know, there wasn't something unique, there's no... differentiated value wasn't there. There was nothing unique. And I tell him, you gotta stay for Rosh Hashanah, stay for Rosh Hashanah. You gotta stay for Yom Kippur. After Yom Kippur, if you're not sold, then go, but you gotta stay for Yom Kippur. So he stays. So he's there at Kol Nidre. It's beautiful. The davening is gorgeous, but, you know, okay. It's very nice. There are a lot of nice davenings. And then somehow he gets directed after Kol Nidre on his way out of Beis Medrash, into this one side room, and he walks into this room, and they're supposed to head there first, and he opens the door, and he's shocked. It's like, he opens the door, and he sees like a bunch of the senior chassidim of the Kutzker sitting around the dining room table full of food, about to dig in. Like, this is like the scandalous underbelly of Kutzk. Like, this is, you know, we'll wait till this leaks to the media. Like, they eat on Yom Kippur. They're like, shocked. So they see, obviously they see he's aghast. And he said, "What's wrong?" He said, "What's wrong?" Yom Kippur. He's like, "Okay, so what's wrong with him?" He said, "Shulchan Aruch says can Yom Kippur." He's like, "Okay, that's good. You can do better." He said, "Gemara says you can Yom Kippur." Okay, you can do better than that. The Mishnah says you can Yom Kippur. Pesukim Chumash. Okay, you gain war. He said, "Kodesh Baruch Hu said you can Yom Kippur." Ah. He said, "Now you're beginning to learn what we teach you here in Kutzk." And with that one twist, he was sold. Because that idea and the Rambam actually does this all the time. That's why it's not an old dichotomy to tell that story in the context of learning Rambam's Perusha Mishnah, because all the time, in the Rambam's Perusha Mishnah, he does it pretty consistently. When he quotes a pasuk, even in a halachic, a technical, clinical halachic context, he'll introduce a piece of a pasuk with the words "Kalalah." Amar Hashem, in the translation, Amar Hashem, Vashviyas Teshmatan and Natashta. According to the pasuk, to which it says in Chumash, he always reminds you, God said that, XYZ. That's something very important, and that's something that was definitely very, very central, very, very central to Rambam's thinking. It forms a big part of why his Mishneh Torah, not only does it, as I said, the corpus is expanded, the scope includes very much topics of Emunah and topics of Jewish thought, but actually begin with Sefer Hamada and Yisodi HaTorah and Emunah and Nevuah. Discussion of Nevuah isn't just a topic, it's at the very beginning. And that's where things begin. So let's take a look.
That's a broad question.
Sure.
So was the thoughts of the Rambam here, was it, would most of the people at the time agree with it? Was there an Asura on it? And he was the most eloquent or the only person who formulated it this way? Or is what he's saying subject, like most things in Torah literature, to Machlokas?
I think yes and yes. I wasn't alive then, so I can't speak with certainty. Some of the things he says, I think, are accepted across the board, at least among people who are learned and who are at the table and equipped to have a learned opinion, an educated opinion. Some of the things he says are radical. Let's say when we get to the source of Machlokas, which is something he famously deals with, it'll take us a couple weeks to get there.
Are we learning something that is integral? Is this something that's integral to
Yahweh? But this is the material we're learning is very, mainstream. Certainly now I think it's seen largely as very mainstream. There are pieces at the end of Akdamat HaMishnah where the Rambam is, what's printed here is Chelek Vav Zayin. There are pieces which are where he is going out on a limb. Most of what he writes here is mainstream. Even at the time, there are issues where he'll say, look, there are many Gaonim who say X, but here's why I disagree. And I think over time, the Rambam's position has become widely accepted. He opens here, and you would ask me earlier in the week, or earlier today, he opens here with a bit of history. Because again, he's given us the organizational scheme is ostensibly a chronological one. So he begins right with a tremendous amount of detail, about how Moshe Rabbeinu taught halachas. So you wonder, where did this come from? So the Rambam doesn't tell you, but in the footnotes here they tell you, and if you look, you see it's drawn largely, I believe, from Midrashei Halacha. It's part of it's on the Pesukim, and the part of the Midrashei Halacha, which were written during the time of the Tanam. Time of Tanam and a little bit early Amaram. Let's say the Sifra was authored by the Tanam and by the first generation of Amaram. Presumably, either Masorah. Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that because this is a little bit of a meta point, because later on the Rambam is actually going to talk about the role of Masorah in Torah Shel Peh versus the role of creative discovery, creative derivation.
Yeah, but these are things about history, not finally derived.
But unless you'll say there may be things which are alluded to, because part of Torah is law, and part of Torah is narrative. So within the narrative, there could also be pieces. Obviously, much more happened in any story than is recorded in Chumash. The conversation must have been, even Yosef, Avraham Avinu, how many words do you hear out of their mouth? Direct quotes, a couple hundred, a couple thousand. Obviously, they spoke hundreds of thousands, not millions of words, of course, in their lifetime. So there could be parts of narrative also that are explicit in the Chumash. There could be parts of narrative that are alluded to the same way details of Halach are alluded to. But it's likely a lot of this was Masorah. You got to take a look in the Sifra and see. Are they presented in Masorah? Are they presenting as, well, if you read this Pasuk stolen carefully, you're getting the following impression. Let me briefly, for those who didn't see, let's briefly talk about, or if you did see, let's briefly review a little bit of what he says. But I want to highlight, see, what's important here is not only that he begins by talking about how Moshe taught Torah, to the Jewish people over the course of the 40 years. But also there's a tremendous amount of foreshadowing going on here because he's highlighted a number of critical ideas that are true beyond as well. I had made a list a couple days ago preparing for this year of all the different, at least five or six major themes that have come out that the Rambam is sort of like encapsulating, that he's going to unpack throughout the course of the Hakdama. Now, I apologize, I'm probably not going to get to all five or six, because I realized on my way to the meeting that preceded this year that the notes I had written, I probably left in Washington Heights. So I probably remember several of them, but if, I apologize if I leave out one or two. Yeah.
Did I hear you correctly before that it was written in Arabic? Right?
Yeah. The Haggadah.
So,
the Parish was written in Arabic.
So is there one definitive translation?
Yeah, that's a good point. That's actually an incredibly important point, because I would encourage, I think it's a great idea, in general, once we're sort of up and running, I think the learning will be, you can work well from copies, but I think the learning will be more substantive if you actually have a safer to work from, especially if you learn the Chavrusa. Now, that's actually an important point. So, and the Parish HaMishnah in particular has suffered historically from a lack of uniformity in the quality of the translations. Different parts of the Parish HaMishnah were translated traditionally by different people, some of whom say openly in their introduction to their chelek, you know, they asked me to do this, I'm doing it, but I feel bad because, you know, I don't really know Arabic so well. So it was always, as Rav Kaffa points out, we always thought that that was humility. But then it was discovered that actually was accurate. So some of the translators were good, and some translators missed a lot in there. So the two that I would really recommend, Rav Kaffa, Masada Rav Kook, published, Yosef Kaffa was the Gadol, the late Gadol of Taimani Jewry, and he learned, when he was a Talmud of Rav Kook, and when Rav Kook was still alive, and Yeshiva was then called Yeshiva Chazir, Rav Kook had developed a very extensive curriculum for Machshava, 10 different schools of thought that we're going to learn over the course of the next number of years. And Rav Kaffach describes, they would sit around in a circle of Rav Kook, which like, makes you tickle just to think about it. Rav Kook would be teaching Kuzri, Rav Kook would be teaching Mara, whatever he taught a Sefer, which was a translation from the Arabic, Rav Kaffach's, at that time it was Yosef Kaffach's, job was to sit there with the original Arabic and raise his hand anytime there was a significant difference. And that sort of inspired him ultimately to devote a good part of his life to retranslating the Kuzari, retranslating Chavos Salva, retranslating several Svarim, and particularly Svarim of the Rambam. So his the original edition of the Kaffach Parish HaMishnah was 6 volumes because he had facing pages, Arabic and Hebrew. And they decided, they realized that most people were really interested in the Arabic, so they republished it in a more compact 3-volume version that cut out the Arabic. So this is great. This is great. What some people will find even better, and it's sort of a matter of taste, that's a sefer that I left with my notes, but the copy you have, this is Rav Shelat from Malei Adumim, Birkat Moshe, the Hezri Shiv Malei Adumim, so he's a Rambam expert. And he did not retranslate the entire Parish HaMishnah, but he did work out a fresh retranslation of the 3 Hashkafic Hagdamas of the Rambam, the Parish HaMishnah, the 3 I mentioned before. And that's actually the first course in Jewish philosophy at Malei Adumim. Shana Aleph, that's the Machshava course, is going through the 3 Hagdamas. So he has, that's what you have in front of you. The language is more traditional, unlike Rav Kaffach, who started from scratch and didn't pay any attention to the earlier translations, just looked at the Arabic and translated into Modern Hebrew, which is one approach. So Rav Shelat says, but I prefer, to, as much as possible, keep sort of the traditional terms of phrase that people have gotten used to over the centuries, but to edit whenever, to modify the traditional Hebrew translation whenever the Arabic demands it. And there are nekudos in the Shailat edition, as you see in the copies in front of you, because this is Shailat. And if you actually have the Sefer, in the back, his incredible essays, which are more or less, I think, his lecture notes for his shiur that he gives every year in these 3 Hagdamas. It's magnificent. I think if you can learn all of Rambam's Parish, all Mishnahs with Rambam, I would say get a Rav Kaffach. The interest really is just this Chabura and the Ashkafa and the Hagdamas, I think you might find, particularly if you think the Kudos will be helpful, and even if not, the Rav Shelat's edition is very, very compelling. I would not use just the translation in the back of the Vilna Shas. That's the old translation, which is better than nothing, but there'll be a lot of things which are either awkward translations from the Arabic, or inaccurate, or misunderstandings. It's hard to use, and every once in a while you miss an important point. So he opens by telling us the first one. This is Daki Kol Mitzvah, and this is, in a sense, it's sort of like the thesis statement. Daki Kol Mitzvah Shenasna Hashem L'Moshe Rabbeinu Nitna Lo Im Perusha. He says, I'll unpack the details in a moment, but you got to know that God taught Torah Shebichzav and Torah Shebaalpeh. When God transmitted mitzvahs to Moshe Rabbeinu, he transmitted text and he transmitted a basic perush. And Rav Shail actually points out, if you look at the Rambam's introduction to Mishnah Torah, which is rarely looked at, he opens by referencing a pasuk that talks about, I forget the exact pasuk, something like Reina Sati Lefanecha Yom Satorah as a mitzvah. I'm mangling the pasuk a little bit. So the Chazal understand in Mishnah Halacha that Torah is reference to Torah Shebichzav and mitzvah is a reference to Torah Shebaalpeh. And Rav Shaila suggested the import of that is that Torah Shebichzav alone is not operable, is not operational. You want to have operative. You're talking about it's clear in Torah Shebichzav that it's very, very important that we keep the mitzvahs. That is, if you just learn Chumash, especially Chumash Devarim, you get that message loud and clear. That keeping mitzvahs is absolutely, keeping all these instructions is absolutely critical. At the same time, it's not so easy to figure out. Shabbat, keeping, to violate Shabbos would be terrible. Absolutely terrible. It's very clear in Torah Shebichzav. It's entirely ambiguous as to what it is that you're not supposed to do. So the Torah Shebaalpeh is the mitzvah. Torah Shebaalpeh is what renders Torah Shebichzav not just a Torah sort of a theoretical teaching, ideas, but the mitzvah is a commandment. Makes it operational. So Rav says that pasuk is talking about Kadosh Baruch Hu presents us with Torah and mitzvah. And Rav says that's the first thing you got to understand about Mishnah. The first thing you got to understand about Halacha is that God taught Moshe Torah Shebichzav together with the perush of the mitzvah. He doesn't say that he taught him all the Torah Shebaalpeh. As a matter of fact, we'll get there in a couple weeks. Rambam's going to get clear that God did not teach Moshe Rabbeinu all the content of Torah Shebaalpeh. A lot of it was only developed later. But the core, there was a core of Torah Shebaalpeh, a perush, that he was taught. And then he begins to say, Hayah Hashem Omer Lo Hamikra, and Omer Lo Perusho, Ve'inyano, Mashakol Zem Mikra Mechuka. And he would teach him the pasuk. We know from it, and it's worth noting right away that the Rambam is thinking of Torah as a collection of mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are his units. If you've learned Mishnah Torah, so you know that whenever he opens up a section, be it the halachas of Shabbos, halachas of Avodah Zarah, or halachas of Yisodi HaTorah, he'll begin by saying this area is composed of comprised of the following three mitzvahs, the following five mitzvahs, whatever it is, and then let me elaborate. He organized the entire Torah. The entire Mishnah Torah is organized as an elaboration on the Torah mitzvahs. A compendium of the Torah Shebaalpeh is understanding the Torah mitzvahs. That's the goal, understanding the mitzvahs. And Rambam is very clear when he talks about how to count mitzvahs, that the mitzvah, Torah mitzvahs are those things which, rule number one, is daraisas which appear in the Chumash. So right away, we're looking at God is teaching mitzvahs, meaning God is teaching psukim in the Chumash, and together with those psukim, and together with those parshios, he's simultaneously frying Moshe with a basic perush. And then Moshe, then the Rambam goes on to say in the rest of this first paragraph that you have, so he says, God teaches Moshe, and then Moshe transmits it to the people. And you saw, and his whole system, he would teach Aaron, then he would teach, then Aaron sort of stepped aside, and he would teach Aaron's sons. And they step to the side, and he teaches the Zakenim, and then they step to the side, and he teaches the entire people, and then Moshe leaves. Then Aaron has a turn to teach, and he leaves. The sons have a turn to teach, they leave, and the Zakenim have a turn to teach, and then everyone sort of spreads out and reviews, and continues to learn, continues to work on the ideas. So that's that opening paragraph and a half. That's really the first page. So, the details are derived of the Moshe, Aaron, the son, the sort of those categories of people. Those details, I believe, are rooted in a Sifra. So the Rambam is probably highlighting it. Shailot says something, doesn't say it's exactly like this, but the Rambam is probably highlighting these details for a number of reasons. Number one, now, because there are a bunch of a number of concepts that bubble up right away. One is need for chazara. It's built into the system. Before we get lofty, let's get practical for a moment. One is the fact that it's being very clear that to learn something means to learn it several times. Everyone heard it four times. Right? Aaron hears it four times from Moshe, once directed to him, and then he hears it from the sidelines three times. And then everyone else hears it, let's say the sons of Aaron hear it three times from Moshe, and then one time from their father. And then, so if everyone hears it, whatever the permutations are, but everyone has been taught it, Moshe is taught it from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, everyone else is taught it four times, and then he says in the second paragraph, and after that, at any rate, people would leave the shiur room, he'd leave the yeshiva, so Moshe Rabbeinu is like the Shail discussed. Moshe Rabbeinu is Rosh Shiva. Rambam is pointing out that the learning, going back to earliest times, obviously a lot of the details change, a lot of societal details change, but there's a certain core of process that is a kernel of the process is being maintained. They wore different clothing, and they were in a different climate, but they had a yeshiva. They had a yeshiva, and we have a yeshiva. A lot of the details are different, but the sense of continuity of Masora is there. The need for Chazara is there from the very beginning, and the fact that Kavod HaTorah is going to be a part of the process of learning itself. The Rambam is clear about the protocol. Gets to hear from Moshe privately, and then he sits to the right, and then this one sits to the left. If you read the paragraph, well, those details are there in terms of the positioning. I think what's driving that is that the Kavod HaTorah is not just sort of like a separate independent mitzvah, but that becomes part and parcel of the way Torah is transmitted. The sense of reverence. He'll get to the sense to the innovation and asking questions. That's all to come, but the foundation is a sense of respect and reverence. And then, in addition to sort of like the practical nuts and bolts of the way Torah is being transmitted as yeshiva and with Chazara and with Kavod HaTorah and so on and so forth, there's also, Rambam is stressing that Moshe Rabbeinu from the get-go, was transmitting Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, or at least a proto-Torah Shebaal Peh from the get-go, and there was a great concern from the outset in terms of fidelity of transmission. And the Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching and teaching again and teaching again, and then it says next paragraph. And afterwards, they would leave yeshiva, they would be continuing to chazer, continue to ask questions, and there were chozerim who would move around and take people's questions. And then if you turn the page, I'll take a question in a moment, if you turn the page, he goes on to say that at the end of... in the middle, we can move back to the point, but in the middle of Kafkes, the paragraph begins, Vahiba Sofar Ba'a Mishana, the end of 40 years, he stresses, and then Rosh Bay realizes that he's going to pass away soon. And an era, not just a person, but in a sense, if you had to divide the style of teaching and transmitting Torah over Jewish history into two epochs, it would be Moshe and post-Moshe. That really takes us to the next topic, which is Nevuah. Because the most radical change of all the changes that have occurred over the generations in terms of how Torah is transmitted, in a sense, the most radical change was 40 years in. Because Moshe is getting, and the Rambam is going to stress it, and we'll pick up more of that next time. He really stresses it in the last paragraph of section Aleph. Moshe Rabbeinu got Torah via Nevuah. Revelation. God tells him, here's Allah. As a matter of fact, he had questions. He said, hold on. Good child, I'm not sure. Let me go ask Kadosh Baruch Hu. We'll get on the red phone. We'll ask Ribbono Shel Olam. He says, Kashem Eis Moshe Rabbeinu, it's done. Once Moshe dies, there's a radical shift in terms of how halacha works. Now we have Ruv Lo Bashamayim. Whereas for the first 4 years, everything was coming through Nevuah. Now Nevuah is going to be very important. And that's why the Rambam's next major topic is, what exactly is the role of Nevuah? But it's no longer to transmit new halachas. So all of a sudden now, any further questions that need to be worked out aren't going to be worked out through revelation, they worked out through our own hard work. Question?
Yeah, I think it's also interesting to point out Rambam choosing. Oh, this medrash about the way the Torah is taught also fits with Rambam's take on the mitzvahs that have the importance of Mesorah in terms of his opinion that certain that the mitzvahs that there's no machlokas about. It's because we know them for sure from
that's a very good point. Right? And we're going to see he's going to talk about that explicitly pretty soon. We're rapidly running out of time, so let me just talk about sort of where we're headed next time, not technically, but just sort of the topics. He's setting this up, and we'll see it going forward. He's already talking explicitly about. Exactly what Yair was talking about. There were pieces of the Torah Shabbat they already had, and those aren't going to be subject to dispute. And then there are pieces of Torah Shabbat which we don't have, and that's sort of the next topic to come after our next. The next topic, our very next topic in Chelek Beis is going to be the role of Nevuah, and then after that, he's going to manage using his chronological scheme to get us to, now that Nevuah is behind us, let's talk about the other half, which is human input and human analysis, debate, discussion, how that works, and from that we'll come to the parts of Torah Shel Peh and the role of Machlokas. Thank you so much. Shkoch.
Yeah.
So I'll